Welcome to the Car Trade Revisited, the podcast series where we talk about the industry we all love and have running in our blood. I'm Gordon McLeish. I've spent over 5 decades in the car trade. In the coming weeks, I'll try to inform, entertain, and hopefully remind you of the things you forgot. Things that make us all carries. So join me on my journey. Do you know what? As I climbed up the stairs to the mezzanine floor and entered the dealership's boardroom, a strange sense of foreboding fell over me. I was about to step from one world into another, from the orderly accounting environment to the chaotic arena of sales. I can still feel it now as though it was yesterday. I remember the warmth and the greeting from everyone in the room, the feeling that I was about to become a member of their mysterious sales brotherhood. I was about to become a card-carrying member of the car salesman's club. The boardroom was crowded, as it always was on a Tuesday morning. New and used car salespeople, the sales cadets, those lazy fleet sales guys, as well as our sales management teams. They all had to be there every week, no exceptions. My God, everyone had a cigarette lit and they were all puffing away madly. The place looked like a scene out of the darkest, blackest days of Birmingham. Smoke filled and darkened the room. The air just stunk. It stunk of cigarettes which permeated your clothes. Too bad if you didn't smoke, because if you didn't, well, in those days at least, you're in the minority. All of the intros were complete and everyone had to call out their weekly sales achievements. These were all duly written down on the blackboard. And we then sat down and watched the weekly sales training movies. They were those 16mm old reel-to-reel movies, mostly in black and white, with B-grade actors, American, that were played on a huge projector. It was noisy. I swear it could wake up the dead. These training films are regularly sent out to the dealership by General Motors, the General. Or they were hired from Rank Arena sales training down in Deep Dean. I was very aware that I was going to be selling the GM product. And knowing little of the workings of the auto industry, I visited the library to learn about the industry. Not much there that could help me. No, we didn't have Google back then. So I picked Henry Ford's bio, as I couldn't find anything written about GM at the library. But that didn't matter much, as the months ahead, I'd be well informed and educated by those most wondrous and most interesting sales training movies. Actually, they were interesting. Born on July the 30th, the book said, in 1863 near Dearborn, Michigan, Henry Ford created the Model T Ford and went on to develop the assembly line. It went on how, when he was 13, his father gave him a pocket watch and he pulled it apart and reassembled it, and his friends and neighbours were so impressed, they all started asking him to fix their timepieces. In the years that followed, he'd learned to skillfully operate and service steam engines, and he'd also studied some bookkeeping, it said. So there were some similarities there with my life's journey, I thought. The North American Ford Falcon was assembled in Australia in 1960. The Australian-American product line separated during the mid-60s when the US Ford product proved inconsistent with the Australian desires and requirements. In fact, the initial Ford Falcon required extensive re-engineering beyond the standard right-hand drive adaptation for Australian conditions. Since its initial offering, the Falcon has proved to be Ford Australia's most popular car. Well, up until recently when they stopped production here in Australia. But Ford manufactured, I think, 3 million units since 1960. And topped the sales charts many occasions. But the numerous mechanical and quality problems at first that the Falcons in the early 60s gave the competitor General Motors an edge in sales with their Holden products. That edge was the perception that the Holden product, this is what I was told as a young cadet and beaten into me, was of greater build quality and reliability. And it was into those same halcyon days in the mid-60s that a young man, aka me, entered the sales arena. Bright-tailed and bushy. No, is that bushy and bright? It wasn't very bright. Maybe it was bushy-tailed. There really were only two choices when it came to choosing a car back then. You either chose the Falcon or the Holden. I found myself in the Holden camp, eager and willing to learn the trade. In 1960, Holden had introduced its third major new model, the FB. The car's styling was inspired by those big 1950 Chevrolets with tail fins and wraparound windscreens and dogleg A-pillars, lots of chrome. By the time it was introduced, really many considered the appearance was just dated. Much of the motor industry at the time noted that the adapted style didn't translate well to the more compact Holden. The EK of 1961 was Australia's response to the Ford Falcon with the availability of an automatic transmission. Up until then, they're all manuals. To Holden's advantage, the Falcon was not a durable car, particularly in the front suspension, making it ill-suited for Australia's conditions. The new model featured two-tone paintwork and what we used to call the hydromatic automatic transmission, or the sludge-o-matic. A restyled EJ series came in 62, and that sort of introduced a luxury item called a Premier. And the EH, which I loved, I reckon they're a great-looking little car, came as an update a year later, and that brought the red motor. So everything else had a grey motor, which is pretty old-fashioned and chuggy, but the red motor was pretty performing. I think it was a 149 in the EH, and it provided better performance than the old grey motor. The HD, then in 65, saw the introduction of that Power Glide auto transmission, which was pretty good. And then, one I loved looking at, a mate of mine nearly bought one, they brought an X2 performance option. Had then a 179 cubic inch or 2.9-litre six-cylinder engine. Imagine that. In 66, the year that I started my sales training at Bill Patterson's, the HR was introduced and included changes. The front was a bit better and the back, it was restyled, and I think the engine went from 179 to 186. So it had a 161 engine for the poverty motor, and it had the 186 and I think a 186S if you want a more sporty motor. More significantly though, they were all fitted standard with seat belts. Holden became the first Australian automaker to provide safety devices as standard equipment. As a sales cadet, my training consisted of all the jobs that most salespeople found either tedious or demeaning. Demeaning for a car salesman. Running errands, finding missing keys, doing yard changes, making cups of tea for customers, getting lunches for everybody. I mean everybody. All unofficial, but at the end of the day, it was good grounding, you know. It helped me understand the psyche of the sales team. Then I was sent off to the factory for a sales training course. And as I left, one of the salesmen shook my hand and patted me on the back and said, "Oh, good luck, Gordon. I hope you survive the lobotomy." What was he saying? Then around 2:30 that afternoon, it dawned on me. Really, the training course was run by a couple of older guys who had completely a new and fresh idea on the sales process. I found it was radically different to how the old stages back at work sold cars. It was called Sales Power, the Sales Power System. I think their names were Bob Lewis and Graham Hornsby. It was a week-long thing. I had to go to the factory every day for a week. But by the mid-1960s, dealerships were becoming more and more aware of the other minor brands eating away at their sales numbers. They concluded that they needed a better trained sales force. Many car salespeople were either sports stars or mainly all of ours are VFL football players, and selling Holden brand wasn't all that hard. It also meant that they had a depleted sales force on Saturday afternoons at work because they're all off playing footy. Most of the sales team, they're either in the big league or they're playing for the local footy clubs like Box Hill and Ringwood. But when the footy season was over, they'd stay fit by playing for the local cricket club. The opposition, the Japanese and the European brands, capitalised on this by doing deals on a Saturday that were so tempting, the customers need to sign there and then. These deals, they used to say, will not apply on Monday. And the feeling was generally that the deal had to be done on Saturday and the deal, I'm going to miss out hundreds of dollars. The normal practice of working ahead for a week or letting them go home and think about it over the weekend, suddenly came to a screaming halt. Holden salespeople found their once loyal, he only buys cars from me, mate, customers had bought a Japanese car, or worse still, had signed up for a rival's product down the road while he was away playing footy. I remember back in the early part of my training hearing a new car salesman say when asked by a customer for a test ride in a new Holden, quote, "A test ride? Sorry, mate. If you want to go for a test drive or a test run in a Holden, go call a taxi." Try saying that to our well-informed customers today. Selling Holden cars was really a matter of order taking, really, and it took little, if any, skills to sell them. But by the time I'd entered the trade, times were changing and sales skills urgently needed to be taught and practiced. I was in the vanguard, thank God. That early training would hold me in good stead over the next five or so decades. But that's the subject of another episode. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks for listening. Please rate, review, or subscribe to or follow the podcast on Spotify or Apple or wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm your host, Gordon McLeish, and thank you for listening.